Welcome to Little Fictions on Air. I'm Kate Liston-Mills, your host. In today's episode, we will listen to a short crime story by Andrew Nett. Andrew is a writer and researcher specialising in Australian pulp fiction. His novels are Gunshine State and Ghost Money. He also co-edited Girl Gangs, Biker Boys, and Real Cool Cats Pulp Fiction and Youth Culture, 1950 to 1980. The title of the short fiction we will listen to today is Postcard from Cambodia. It is published by Spineless Wonders in Crime Scenes, an anthology of Australian short crime fiction. The story is performed by Lauren Hamilton Neal and was recorded as part of the 2016 Sydney Fringe Festival. Postcard from Cambodia depicts the journey of a man searching for his family after spending years in prison. We meet him on the side of a remote road, having just abandoned his car. And like all great fiction, this story will make you reconsider the choices people make and how those choices affect the rest of their life and the lives of others. This is Postcard from Cambodia by Andrew Nett.
When the burning smell got worse, Moss pulled off the road to an empty picnic spot, retrieved his black canvas bag from the back seat. He remembered the Smith & Wesson in the glove compartment, another impulse buy, wondered whether he should take it. He dismissed the idea. He locked the car, set off on foot for the remaining 10 or so kilometres into town, lit a cigarette as he walked alongside the road. The setting sun followed him in brittle yellow streams between the tall trees. Moss chose the first hotel he came to. A well-lit front office, rooms in a single-storey U-shape around a car park at the rear. The neon sign announced vacancies. A bell tinkled as he entered the office. He stood at the counter, thumbed a stack of forlorn-looking flyers for local attractions, a nature walk, an historic railway bridge. Canned television laughter was audible in the back office. A middle-aged male with thinning brown hair and doughy features parted a curtain of yellow beads, gave Moss a sullen once-over. "Help you? I'd like a room for a couple of nights. Fill out your details." He passed a registration form and a key attached to a round piece of wood with the number 11 on it. "How are you paying?" "Cash." "I'll still need a credit card, just in case." "Don't have one." The man's eyes narrowed. He started to speak, but Moss silenced him by placing a $50 note on the counter. The man ran two fingers over the white stubble on his fleshy chin, pretending to consider the offer. He shrugged and pocketed the note. "My car broke down about 10 kilometres out of town. Who can I see about getting it towed in and repaired?" "Hennessy's garage at the end of the main street, but he's shut till morning." "Where can I go to get a bite to eat?" Moss paused a beat. "And some female company?" The man licked his pale lips, smiled at the prospect of a fellow conspirator. Moss placed another 50 on the counter. Moss disliked arriving anywhere in the dark, the sense of disorientation and lack of control. He took his time walking along the main drag, getting his bearings. Midweek on the cusp of winter, a couple of takeaway shops and the pub, the only signs of life. Most of the buildings were red brick. A few were older, beginning of last century, the occasional Art Deco flourish, built with logging money. A small country town populated by honest, hard-working souls, but poke hard enough or ask the right person, the sleaze wasn't far away. He'd got lucky. The hotel receptionist was the right person. It had been the same during his time in Asia. Even the friendliest place had an underbelly, a club, bar, or house like the one the receptionist had told him about, and Riviera didn't seem that friendly. Moss sat at the pub counter, eating a mixed grill, taking his time. A smattering of customers pretended to mind their own business but couldn't help checking out the new arrival. He wondered where the name Riviera had come from. The town wasn't near the sea, not even a river. Framed black and white photographs of the town's earlier days on the pub walls supplied no clue. He exited the pub into the chilly night, walked along the main drag, his breath making little clouds, until he found the side street. He passed a few businesses, some of them permanently shuttered. A large stone church set back on a wide lawn. Another few metres he saw the sign, the word Barons, in yellow neon letters. He pushed open the metal door. Inside was all smooth surfaces and cheap stainless steel finishing. Classic rock from the speakers. Cigarette smoke hung in the air. Sport on a TV over the bar. The bright green playing field stood out in the dimly lit space. The only other customers were a clutch of men and a couple of young women at the end of the bar. The men paused, looked at Moss, went back to their conversation. It took Moss a moment to register the presence of several other young females sitting around a glass table in the corner. They reminded him of girls at a school dance, awkward but alert, trying to look street smart beyond their years. Moss glanced at each in turn. His heart skipped a beat as he locked eyes and let his gaze linger on the tallest of the group. He noticed her brown skin and Asian features. He nodded at the single beer tap when the bartender approached, lit a cigarette, closed his eyes against the smoke. When he opened them, the girl was at his side. "Got a light?" Shoulder-length hair fell around her opal face, framed her large brown eyes. It was jet black except for a badly dyed stripe of purple. Moss offered her his lighter. She grinned. "Got a smoke too?" He slid the packet across the bar towards her. She took two, lit one, put the other in the pocket of her denim jacket. She perched on the stool, placed a shoulder purse on the counter. "Haven't seen you in here before," she said between quick drags on her cigarette. "Haven't been in here before." "Passing through?" "Yeah, something like that." "Consider yourself lucky." She glanced around the bar before returning her gaze to him. "Buy me a drink?" Moss nodded at the bartender. She poured the girl a rum and coke. "What's your name?" She dabbed a finger in the condensation on the side of her glass as she spoke, making a circle of moisture at the bar top. "Moss." "I'm Hannah." She ground her cigarette in the ashtray between them. "Want some company, Moss?" "Seems to me that decision's already been made." He smiled to take the edge off his discomfort, suddenly self-conscious in his cheap leather jacket and old jeans. "Dude, seriously, I don't have time for mind games." She blew her cheeks out. "It's not like anyone comes in here by accident." "I'll take your word for it." "So you want some company or not?" "Sure." She lit another cigarette from his pack. Lit it. "You want to do it here or somewhere else?" "What? You want to fuck here? There's a room out the back. Or somewhere else." There was nothing sleazy in the statement. She could have been talking about the weather or her favourite sports team. Moss drained his beer. "Let's go back to my motel." You got to talk to Erskine. You want to do that?" She signalled over his shoulder. He turned around just in time to see a man break away from the group at the end of the bar. The man's companions watched intently as their friend approached, faces grinning in anticipation the joke at Moss's expense. "I don't know you." The man had a broad build, straw-coloured hair, cut short back and sides. "Been in the Riviera long?" "Just stopping in town for a few days while I get my car serviced." "Like it?" Moss detected menace behind his jaunty demeanour, the life of the party and the unofficial enforcer. "You want to take Hannah for some fun, yeah?" Erskine placed his arm around her narrow shoulders. She winced at the contact. You can pay her when you're finished. Do whatever you want, but no rough stuff. Any rough stuff, I'll find out and you'll answer to me. Understood? Moss nodded, stood up. Erskine turned to go back to his mates, paused halfway. You crazy kids have a good time now. Male laughter accompanied them out of the bar. It started to rain on the walk back. They ran the remaining several hundred metres, damp and out of breath by the time they reached the motel. Moss closed the door after her, flicked a light switch. The fluoro tube in the helmet above the double bed spluttered to life. She threw her shoulder purse on the round laminated table, breathed deeply. I got a piss. Moss picked up a glass, took off its plastic wrapping. He lit a cigarette, sat on the edge of the bed, and tapped the ash into the glass. The rain louder now. His fingers stroked the checked acrylic blanket as he thought about Thailand and Cambodia. Other times, perched on the edge of a bed, waiting, as a female he didn't know moved about in the adjoining bathroom. He looked up at the sound of the door opening. Hannah stood backlit by the bathroom light, naked, except for her bra and panties. She pushed him down and started to straddle him, her narrow fingers pulling at his belt. Stop, Moss said, pushed her away. A strand of black hair fell across her face. She bit her lower lip, made another attempt to unbuckle his belt. No. Moss pushed her away, harder this time. Her brow furrowed. I could give you a massage, get you in the mood. No. She folded her arms over her breasts, fixed him with a determined look. What the fuck game you playing, man? It's just... Moss hadn't realised. He hadn't planned what he was going to say. I'm tired. I had a long drive today. So what am I supposed to do? Walk back in the rain to the club? She snatched a singlet from her pile of clothes, pulled it over her head. I'll be fucking soaked by the time I get there. It's even further to the caravan park. Caravan park? Where me and another girl stay. She pulled on her tight black jeans one leg at a time. Not that it's any of your fucking business. Don't worry, I'll pay you. Bloody hell, you'll pay. I leave here without the cash. Erskine will have my ass. He your pimp? Yeah, that and a lot of other things. Moss lit a cigarette. You don't have to go. What do you mean? Sleep here. In the morning, I'll give you whatever money you're owed. You can go, Erskine will be none the wiser. The worst time in prison was when it rained. The drains overflowed, the rats came out, and the dead air was full of mosquitoes and the stench of cramped bodies. Everything was damp. For some reason, no one was allowed out of the cells when it rained, and it rained a lot in Cambodia. He and Rory had been sentenced to 8 years each in Complex 1, Prasar, for importing 2 kilos of ecstasy tablets from Thailand. Moss's idea? They'd sell the pills on Phnom Penh's backpacker party circuit, make some quick money, get out of Cambodia where they'd been for 6 months. Rory wasn't sure he'd wanted to leave. He'd met a local woman, Chon, and was thinking of staying, but went along with the plan anyway. Could always use the money. Their partner in crime, Narid, was a rich Cambodian kid Moss had met one night in a bar called the Heart of Darkness. When the police arrested them in possession of the tablets, Narid's connections gave him protection. The cops offered the two foreigners a deal. Pay $10,000 or jail. They didn't have the money, so it was jail. Moss had gone through Hannah's purse while she slept. Found condoms, a $20 note, a few loose cigarettes, a mobile with no credit, and a creased, dog-eared postcard. On the front of the card was a wide stretch of sandy beach, palm trees, calm blue water, with the words, "Welcome to Sihanoukville," in gold letters. Moss had been there, a deep water port and popular tourist destination in the south of Cambodia. He flipped the postcard over, winced, when he recognized the almost childlike handwriting, promising to take Hannah to Sihanoukville one day. John had been born in a dirt-poor farming village near Sihanoukville. Left at the very first opportunity, took the well-trodden path to Phnom Penh and a job as a bar girl. Rory had taken her from one of the dives on 50 Street 1. A week later, he said he was in love with her. Moss's needs were much simpler. But the nights Rory was out of town, the nights Moss had slept with John, their bodies slick with sex in the tropical heat, the ceiling fans slowly spinning above, changed that. He'd never met anyone like John. She had a hair trigger temper, but she also loved to laugh. A harsh, guttural sound that seemed too big for her relatively small size. She devoured everything in her path, food, drugs, men, life. Halfway through their jail sentence, Rory was killed in a fight with another inmate over a stretch of floor space. The worst thing? Part of Moss was glad his friend would never know. After his release, Moss stayed in Phnom Penh long enough to sort out a new passport and inquire about John. The few people who remembered her said she'd left town soon after he and Rory had gone to prison. One of them, a worn-out bar girl with half a missing finger, told him John had gone to visit a relative in Melbourne, gave him an address. When Moss got back to Australia 7 years later, he looked up the address, a housing commission flat in Broadmeadows occupied by a Cambodian family. John, a distant relative, had stayed there long enough to have her baby, a daughter, called Hannah. He tracked her up the Hume to Sydney before losing the trail. Moss had better luck with Hannah. It took him a couple of years searching between jobs, but he was able to pick up her trace through an old mate working in residential care. It was through him that Moss found out about Hannah's encounters with the law, the first time for shoplifting, the next soliciting. "What about your parents?" Moss had asked Hannah as he poured the last of the bourbon. "Never knew my dad. Mum didn't talk about him." Her voice was drowsy with alcohol and exhaustion. Mum was seriously fucked up. The words flowed with the ease that comes when you talk to a complete stranger, someone you don't care about or think you'll ever see again. She used to dress me up, drag me to bars with her. A conversation started to pick up men. Once she made me carry drugs for one of her boyfriends, this creepy wannabe biker dude. What happened to her? She died. She said it matter of fact, the pain long gone or covered over with more recent scars. Moss swallowed, tried to sound casual. How? It doesn't matter. The crumpled postcard said different. They took turns in the shower. As they were about to leave, Moss handed her money, suggested breakfast before he went to see about getting his car fixed. She shrugged, her wet hair like flowing tar. If you're paying, sure. He opened the front door, indicated for Hannah to go first. She stepped outside, froze. "You kids sleep well?" Moss heard a male voice say. It was the man from the bar last night, Erskine. Only this morning, he wore a police uniform. On the other side of the police cruiser, out of harm's way, stood the receptionist. He grinned, amused at Moss and the girl's surprise. "Get in the car, Han," Erskine said calmly. "I'll run you back to the park." She hesitated. Having sex with a woman must feel good, Eric, after all those years taking it up the arse in that shithole in Cambodia. Moss tried to cloak his surprise, failed if the look on Erskine's face was anything to go by. "Yeah, we may be a small town, but we still have Google. How many years did you do again? 7? 8? Must have been a tough gig." Erskine's brow furrowed in mock concern. "How old are you?" 35? "Christ, man, you look 50, beat up and wasted." Not that I'm surprised what you went through. Wipe a few years off any man's life. What are you doing here in Riviera? Just having a look. Free country after all. Des here says you were asking him about getting your car fixed. What's the problem? Dunno. It's stalled about 10 kilometres out of town. Okay. Erskine breathed deeply, slid his gun back into its holster. You go to Hennessy's garage, tell him I sent you, and they're to give you priority. As soon as your car's fixed, fuck off out of here. Moss drew hard on the last of his cigarette as he watched the police car pull out of the parking lot. Moss got directions to the caravan park from an elderly woman walking her dog. He parked outside the entrance, went on foot, past the temporary visitors, looking for the long-stay residents. He eventually found a prefab building in an isolated spot at the rear. A clothesline was strung up outside, flapping with brightly coloured pieces of female clothing. A tattered canvas awning covered the front entrance, several chairs arranged in a circle underneath. Soft drink cans and food wrappers were strewn in the long grass. The steady thrum of dance music was audible from inside. Hannah, he said loudly to make himself heard over the music. He rapped his knuckles hard on the side of the building. Hannah, you in there? What are you doing here? Hannah said, closing the screen door behind her. She wore the same clothes she had on that morning. Pack some stuff, we're getting out of here. What do you mean, we? Just because you buy me for a night and don't turn out to be a complete asshole doesn't mean you get to tell me what to do. I don't even know who you are. I don't have time to explain it to you now, but your mum... He hesitated. She would have wanted you to come with me. What the fuck you know about my mum? Hannah spat out the words, stepped away, but her eyes didn't leave his. Hannah, I'll tell you everything, I swear, he said, straining to keep the desperation out of his voice, worried it might panic her. But please, just get some stuff. Let's get out of here. Hannah teared up, wiped them away with the sleeve of her top. Where? She sounded resigned. Wherever you want. The sea? Sure. Now come on, grab your stuff. He kept to the speed limit through town, only picked up the pace when they passed the sign farewelling them from Riviera. Hannah leant over, started twisting the knobs on the car radio. This thing work? Dunno. Never tried it. Doesn't look like it. We'll get a new one. Taking one hand off the steering wheel, Moss fished out his cigarettes, lit two from the dashboard lighter, passed one to her. Her eyes were fixed on her side mirror. He checked the rear mirror. A white vehicle was closing on them. The word police, visible across the bonnet in blue letters. Moss put his foot on the accelerator, tried to outpace the vehicle, but the Commodore wasn't up to the challenge. The police cruiser closed the gap. Oh, Jesus, oh shit, we've got to get away from him. Hannah's eyes were wide, overflowed with panic. Hannah, calm down. Moss switched his gaze from the rearview mirror to the road ahead. A two-lane stretch of blacktop, no visible side roads, no way to outrun Erskine. Nowhere to escape. You don't fucking understand, she said breathlessly. You don't know what he's like, what he can do if he gets hold of me. The police car drew up on Moss's side. Erskine smiled over the barrel of his pistol aimed at the front tire. Fired. Hannah's scream merged with the sound of exploding rubber. Moss felt himself lose control of the vehicle. The police car slowed to get clear of the swerving Commodore, but not quickly enough, ploughed into it. The police car rolled before his own vehicle plunged into a deep gully running alongside of the road. The jagged ground reared up at them. The windscreen exploded, showering Moss and Hannah in broken glass. His head hit the steering wheel. A burst of pain exploded along his right leg. He had no idea how long he'd been out. He thought he was going to pass out as he hauled himself out of the car, wiped the blood from his eyes with his forearm. Heard something. A voice. He took a deep breath, gritted his teeth against the pain as he dragged himself up the slope towards the road. The voice became louder. Moss recognized it. Erskine. Hannah stood over him, the Smith & Wesson in her hand, oblivious to Moss. "Hannah, help me," pleaded Erskine. "Come on, we've had some good times, some real good times." Hannah raised the pistol. "For fuck's sake, girl, don't play around with that. It's fucking dangerous. Come on, I'll give you whatever." The shot silenced Erskine mid-sentence. The sound, like a whip crack, echoed in the trees. She fired again. Erskine's limp body jumped at the contact. Hannah wheeled around, suddenly aware of Moss, locked eyes with him. Moss reached a hand towards her. "Hannah, no." She lowered the weapon, dropped it on the ground. Moss realized he'd been holding his breath, exhaled deeply. The pain in his leg, which lay at an odd angle in front of him, got worse. She walked past him, climbed down into the gully, and retrieved something from the front passenger seat. It was the shoulder purse. Moss watched in silence as Hannah opened the purse, took out the postcard. Reassured it was there, she dropped it back into the purse, fished her jacket out of the back of the car, put it on, and slipped the purse over her shoulder. She climbed out of the gully, stood on the roadside next to him, looked at him. No recognition in her eyes. Started walking. Moss went to say something but stopped himself, watched her until she rounded the bend, disappeared from view. He had an idea of where she was headed. She had a long way to go.
That was an abridged version of Andrew Nett's Postcard from Cambodia. It was narrated by Sydney actor Lauren Hamilton Neal. If we were to meet people like Moss, the ex-prisoner, and Hannah, the prostitute, we might be quick to assume that they are the immoral ones and that Erskine, the police officer, was an upstanding citizen. But in this story, we are challenged to reconsider preconceived ideas about prison, prostitution, and the police. We're challenged to look further into the circumstances of people's lives and to judge them more by their behaviour and attitudes. Also consider that the author specialises in pulp fiction studies and the crime genre. Pulp fiction, born in the newsstands of the early 20th century, often featured exotic locations, mysterious and strange characters, as well as pretty women. Andrew Nett writes in this genre but manages to avoid any simplistic stereotyping, which was often a hallmark of pulp fiction. He achieves this through such things as his deep understanding of life in Cambodia and his sensitive exploration of his characters, and also by taking us deeper into their psychology. Andrew Nett has created a complex main character in Moss, revealing light, dark, love, and remorse in his personality. Postcard from Cambodia successfully uses some of the features of classic crime pulp fiction and presents in a wonderfully thrilling manner that all is not what it may seem. And that's all we have time for today. I hope you've enjoyed this episode. Little Fictions on Air is produced by Bronwyn Meehan and the production assistant is Caddy Hansen. I'm Kate Liston-Mills. Please join me again for Little Fictions on Air.